X-Talks connects professionals in the life science, medical device, and food industries with useful content like webinars, job openings, articles, and virtual meetings to help you succeed in your career. This Life Science Focus podcast brings together some of our editorial staff to share insights into the latest B2B industry news to keep you up to date. This week on the show, we're discussing the first oral medication for the treatment of postpartum depression in adults. And the J&J Talk litigation saga continues. Enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the X-Talks Life Science Podcast. I'm Aisha Rashid, Senior Life Science Journalist at xtalks.com, and this week I'm joined by Vera Kovacevic. Thanks for coming today. I'm going to start us off with a story about a new FDA approval, and this is a pretty landmark approval for a new drug to treat postpartum depression. So Biogen and Sage's Zurzuvae, or zuranolone, has been approved by the FDA as the first oral medication for the treatment of postpartum depression, or PPD, in adults. So up until now, treatment for PPD was only available as an IV injection, and that had to be given by a healthcare provider in specific or certain healthcare facilities. So PPD is a major depressive episode that usually occurs after childbirth, but it can also begin during the later stages of pregnancy. And according to the CDC, mental health conditions are the leading cause of maternal mortality, and PPD is among the most common complications during and after pregnancy. The condition affects about 500,000 people in the U.S. every year, and it is estimated that approximately 1 in 8 women experience PPD symptoms. And PPD symptoms can last beyond the postpartum period as well and can lead to prolonged maternal morbidity. Now, according to information shared by Brain Health Disorders-focused Biotech Sage, which is a partner of Biogen in the development of Zurzuvae. So in the press release announcing its approval, Sage said that approximately half of all PPD cases may go undiagnosed without appropriate screening. So some symptoms of PPD can include depressed mood, loss of interest in activities, changes in sleep patterns and appetite, decreased energy, feelings of guilt or worthlessness, trouble concentrating, and in some cases, thoughts of suicide as well. Zurzuvae is an oral, once-daily, 14-day treatment that can offer rapid improvements in depressive symptoms for women with PPD, according to Sage and Biogen. So now what's interesting about Zurzuvae, of course, this is a big win for this indication. However, Sage and Biogen were also going after an approval in major depressive disorder. However, unfortunately, that indication was rejected by the FDA at the same time that the application for PPD was approved. So it was kind of, the approval for PPD was somewhat clouded by the simultaneous rejection of Zurzuvae for major depressive disorder. So for that, the FDA issued a complete response letter for Sage and Biogen's NDA for zuranolone, in which it said that the application did not provide substantial evidence of effectiveness to support the approval of zuranolone for the treatment of MDD or major depressive disorder, and that an additional study or studies will be needed. Sage and Biogen, in response, said that they are reviewing the FDA's feedback and evaluating next steps. So the companies were banking on an approval in the MDD indication to make up a large chunk of Zurzuvae's market share. And so, you know, industry experts, including analysts at Mizuho Securities, said that the dual approval and rejection was more disappointing than good, and they noted that MDD would have offered a meaningfully larger opportunity, of course, for Zurzuvae, with projected 2030 sales in MDD amounting to about $1.3 billion compared to around just $200 million for PPD. And also, there was also, uncertainty around future trials, even if Biogen and Sage decide to go ahead with them, because in the Mountain trial that evaluated Zurzuvae for MDD, a 30 milligram dose did not lead to statistically significant results, and a higher 50 milligram dose didn't do much more. And so going even higher than 50 milligrams could lead to undesirably higher sedation rates, according to this analyst group. So, you know, they're just saying that it's not really clear what Biogen and Sage could really do if they do choose to continue additional clinical trials, since they have evaluated two doses, and then going higher could, you know, would have side effects that are not desirable. However, of course, Sage is moving ahead with Zurzuvae and PPD, again, a very important indication, and it's expecting to launch it in the fourth quarter of 2023. The FDA approval of Zurzuvae for PPD was based on results from the Robin and Skylark studies, which are part of the NEST clinical development program. So in the studies, Zurzuvae met the primary endpoints, which was a significant average reduction in depressive symptoms from baseline at day 15 on the 17-item Hamilton Rating Scale for Depression. And this is a common measure of depression severity. And so the significant reduction was, of course, compared to placebo, was seen in comparison to placebo. Now, in terms of the market, Zurzuvae will be joining Sage's other PPD drug, Zulresso, which was approved in 2019. So Zurzuvae will have the edge over Zulresso because Zulresso is administered by infusion, whereas, of course, Zurzuvae it's an oral medication, and so much easier to take and much more convenient. What's also interesting is that going back to the failure of Biogen and Sage to secure approval for Zurzuvae and MDD, Biogen was a little bit conspicuous. Its absence was conspicuous, from Sage's press release that was announcing Zurzuvae's approval for PPD. So, I don't know, industry analysts are just speculating that, Biogen doesn't seem to be too happy and might be distancing itself given the failure in MDD. But earlier this year, Biogen CEO Christopher Viehbacher said that zuranolone or Zurzuvae is a top priority in the short term for the company in the U.S. So Biogen and Sage entered a $1.5 billion development deal in 2020 to jointly develop treatments for depression and other neurological disorders. And this includes, of course, zuranolone or Zurzuvae, known by its commercial name, and another compound called SAGE-324. And these were to be available for essential tremor and other neurological disorders. And interestingly, after the approval of Zurzuvae, Biogen's stock fell by about 0.26% and Sage's fell by almost 48%. And this is, again, likely reflective of the hopes that were tied with its approval in MDD. So, Vera, I just wanted to get your thoughts on this approval. I mean, even though it wasn't approved for MDD, I think it's still a huge win in PPD, right? Because it's the first oral medication in this indication. And so I think that, you know, sure, market-wise, MDD is, you know, definitely a bigger market, but I think this is very important for patients that go through PPD, and there are very many, and a lot go undiagnosed as well, so.
Yeah, you're totally right, Aisha. I think we don't often hear that after a drug approval, a company's stock falls, right? Mm-hmm. So they were really banking on the additional MDD approval. Which it may still happen in the future. Maybe they just need to reformulate the drug or something. Mm-hmm. But quite great news because, as you said, yes, Zurzuvae is the first pill. And that's quite substantial because I was looking into the other approved treatment for postpartum. And the one you mentioned that's delivered through an IV. Mm-hmm. Well, that IV delivery process is like it occurs over the course of 60 hours.
Oh, wow.
And the total cost of this process through the IV delivery and on that drug is like $34,000. So just taking a pill for 2 weeks is, in my opinion, much easier.
Yep.
Both, you know, on the patients and on, you know, healthcare providers.
Yeah.
So yeah, this is definitely a big win. Huge. But Aisha, like, how much have you heard of postpartum depression? Like, I haven't heard much about it. It's surprising this is now only the second approved drug for this indication.
Yeah, I don't know if it's just the second approved. It's the first oral. I know, yeah, so Zilressa is Sage's other, but I think there might be some other, again, given via IV infusion probably as well, but some other drugs as well. So yeah, just antidepressants can also be used to treat PPD. So some of these include bupropion and so that's just used also to treat. Again, it's just a normal antidepressant. And so there are a handful of others that can be used as well. So yeah, I mean, again, this is a huge win, I think, for PPD. And I actually have heard about PPD, postpartum depression, quite a lot, especially in recent years. I think there's been more attention than you know, has been on it before. Before, I think it would be called something like the baby blues or things like that.
Yeah.
And so, but now I think there's a lot more awareness around it. And which is really great to see, because I can imagine how isolating it must be to have this, and with, you know, a new baby and just a lot of it's a stressful time as is. And then so, and then dealing with, you know, a mental health issue like this on top of it, it's very, very difficult. And so I think there needs to be more increased awareness around it, keep increasing awareness around it. Because Vera, like you were saying, that you don't really tend to hear too much about it, which is true. Because I think, you know, having a baby, it kind of is almost an isolating time in some societies. I know in some societies, you know, the family and community really comes together. But let's say in Western societies, like where we live, people may not necessarily have that kind of support. And so it can be an isolating time. And I think if a woman or if a person is suffering from PPD, people might not even know. They might not even know themselves. Like how I mentioned, I think in that press release, Sage was saying that a lot of cases go undiagnosed. Like people themselves may not know why they're feeling that way, and they may not seek support. So I think awareness is, you know, very key in this. And then, yeah, to have a drug now that can be taken as an oral pill is fantastic, instead of having to go in to get an IV, you know, or just taking general antidepressants that may not be as effective. So I think this is really, really a great win, and I do hope that we start seeing more you know, approvals in this area for this indication.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, so let's talk about what Johnson & Johnson is up to in its baby powder litigations. So of course we've been covering this a lot here on X Talks, just because, you know, there are always new developments happening on that front, and it's always an important story. I think it's really, you know, setting a precedent for maybe what other companies should or should not be doing, rather. So Johnson & Johnson attempted another bankruptcy move, and that was tied to its proposed $8.9 billion settlement for its talc or baby powder litigations. And so its latest bankruptcy attempt has been rejected by the United States Bankruptcy Court for the District of New Jersey. So bankruptcy court judge Michael Kaplan decided that Johnson & Johnson's subsidiary LTL Management didn't meet certain requirements to qualify as a good faith bankruptcy attempt. In the court's ruling, Judge Kaplan wrote that a company must demonstrate that it is suffering from financial distress, which must be immediate and apparent at the time of the bankruptcy filing. And in determining that financial distress, observing smoke may not be enough. One must see flames, said Kaplan. So in a statement released after the decision, Johnson & Johnson said it will appeal the ruling, saying that LTL launched its bankruptcy case in good faith and in strict compliance with the bankruptcy code. And Johnson & Johnson said that to avoid wasting decades and billions of dollars litigating the talc baby powder cases in the tort system, its proposed $8.9 billion settlement would afford timely and equitable compensation for all claimants. It said LTL will appeal the bankruptcy court's ruling to preserve claimants' ability to avail themselves of this offer. So Johnson & Johnson created the subsidiary LTL Management to handle its talc litigations specifically. And this was done through a controversial bankruptcy strategy called the Texas Two-Step, which involves offloading liabilities to a subsidiary, and then that subsidiary can then file for bankruptcy. So again, very controversial, but it is not outside of the legal system. So Johnson & Johnson is facing more than 100,000 lawsuits which claim that its baby powder had asbestos in it, which caused ovarian cancer and mesothelioma among other cancers. And of course, so when talc is mined, asbestos naturally occurs near talc. And so sometimes it is hard to remove it, but as we know, Johnson & Johnson, there were whistleblowers way back dating to the 70s where there were concerns raised back then about higher than acceptable levels of asbestos in the baby powder. And there are claims that Johnson & Johnson ignored those flags that were raised at the time and continued on. And so there was just a lot of, this has been going on for quite a long time, even though the court cases began about 10 to 15 years ago. But this has been an ongoing issue for decades. So according to Bloomberg, actually Johnson & Johnson and a committee of cancer victims actually came to agreed to speed up the court appeal. So there are, different groups out there. I think I covered one group of plaintiffs that, just outright are rejecting Johnson & Johnson's $8.9 billion settlement offer. But then there is a committee here that recently has agreed to speed up the court appeal. So I think there are, different parties just looking for different things, or maybe, this group just wants to speed things up and, come to a settlement. But then other groups are like, well, the settlement being offered is not enough. So it's very interesting to also follow that. So the first time Johnson & Johnson tried to put its subsidiary into bankruptcy was in 2021. And that case was dismissed, after which Johnson & Johnson struck a deal, again, with tens of thousands of claimants and had LTL file for bankruptcy again. But then the case was, again, rejected. So it seems that the court is not having it with Johnson & Johnson's attempts at bankruptcy using this Texas two-step strategy. So amid the bankruptcy filings and appeals, unfortunately, the talc litigations are for the most part on hold. However, Judge Kaplan did permit one case to proceed in court recently, and that decision awarded a plaintiff $18.8 million. So throughout its legal battles with its baby powder, Johnson & Johnson has maintained throughout that its baby powder is safe. However, despite this, the company did pull it off shelves in the U.S. and Canada beginning in 2020, and it has plans to do the same globally this year. I think it's probably well on its way to be pulling it off shelves in most countries by the end of the year. And the company has replaced it with a cornstarch version of it. So the company said that it's been pulling it off shelves because of all of the negative press and attention around it. So, and obviously because of that, sales were dropping and things like that. And so that's why it decided to pull the talc version off and has replaced it with a cornstarch version. So yeah, after the bankruptcy court ruling, Johnson & Johnson's shares were down 4.1%, which was on track to be the largest daily percentage drop in the company's shares since June 2020. So this Texas two-step bankruptcy strategy is not something just that Johnson & Johnson is using in the pharma world. There are some other companies that have attempted to offload hundreds of thousands of injury claims and court cases through various versions of this technique, and companies like 3M and Georgia-Pacific are currently trying to do this. But it seems that the bankruptcy court's continued rejections of Johnson & Johnson's bankruptcy strategy is sending a strong message to Johnson & Johnson and to other companies that may be looking or are attempting the same approach. So just wanted to get your thoughts on the latest in this baby powder saga for Johnson & Johnson.
Yeah, very interesting but sad story. Definitely I agree with the judge. I mean, even with like an $8.9 billion settlement, which like J&J is proposing for their TAC litigations. So let's assume even with $8.9 billion, the company is still going to be fine. They are in no immediate financial distress, even if they have to pay that out right away.
Yeah.
Because like looking at their revenue and income numbers from last year, 2022, mm-hmm. So Johnson & Johnson's annual revenue for 2022 was $95 billion, essentially. Mm-hmm. But their net income, wow. Mm-hmm. Which is, you know, more significant here when you take revenue minus expenses, mm-hmm. that was almost $18 billion just for 2022 alone. So just like looking at these numbers, like they are not in any financial distress. Like they cannot claim that at all. Like that is just not true.
It's hard to feel sorry for them, right?
Yeah. And you know what? They are the second leading pharma company in the world in terms of revenue right after Pfizer. Mm-hmm. So Johnson & Johnson is doing pretty well. And even with an $8.9 billion payout, like they're still going to be fine. They're going to be able to pay for all of their expenses. So at least that's what the numbers show from last year.
Yeah.
So it's, they cannot claim bankruptcy. And I think the judge did a good job
keep shooting it down.
Yeah.
Shooting down the bankruptcy attempts and appeals and all of that.
But you know what's really crazy? Like, I didn't know that they have like 100,000 court lawsuits. Cases yeah. against, yeah, lawsuits for yeah. the baby powder. That is a lot of people. It oh is. My goodness.
I know.
I didn't know.
Yeah, it's like really up there. Like, that's huge. And that just goes to show that, like, how this has really had, you know, far-reaching impacts. And like baby powder, I remember, like, I think almost every baby growing up in the 80s, 90s, like, you know, their parents would, it was like a staple, right? And yeah. And then women were, you know, using it themselves as well. And so it was a staple household product. I think every household had baby powder around, like in some form or another. And so, yeah, actually, if you think about it, it seems like a lot of cases. But because this was such a household product, I think it does make sense that there are so many cases and so many victims resulting from, you know, its use. And so what we're seeing now, so it's pretty crazy. Like, I think it's one of the biggest, like, pharma scandals in the industry, I would say, in recent yeah. times. So
yeah. And you know why else? It's because it's like a direct to consumer product.
Yeah,
like anyone can pick it up from well, when it was available, anyone could just go to a store and pick it up. It wasn't something that needed to be prescribed or that a doctor needed to look at the risk and benefits and then give you a prescription. And then you have to, you know, you may have some side effects. It was not like, obviously was not a drug at all. So you think that something that's a consumer product is going to be safe in general? Yeah. Like, most people don't read like even the instructions for use or anything
that's
for
true,
consumer products. So yeah, that's quite shocking. But I'm sure you'll keep us up to date with the latest developments of this, because it's not over yet, right?
Oh no. It always seems like it's just beginning. It's like something happens and then it's like back to square one, you know, like for Johnson & Johnson, it's like back to the drawing board. What do we do now? But they're pretty adamant. I have to say they are holding their ground on this. Like, they're very adamant about appealing these rejections, these bankruptcy rejections, and they're very adamant on, you know, what they're offering. And they're kind of like, well, you know, this is the best we, you know, offer, you know, claimants should take this and, you know, stop wasting time, stop wasting more money and things like that. So they're holding their ground, which is very interesting to see, because I think we talked about this before. This has really put a dent, obviously, in their reputation, but has it? Like, I feel like public memory is so short. Like, they'll hear about it, but then it just, Johnson & Johnson is so huge and it has so many products. And does it make you like hesitant about buying their products, Vera, or like about just the company in general? Or is it kind of like, well, it's there, we can't, you know, avoid it? Or like, what's the feel there?
Are you talking about like, let's say if I was prescribed a drug, or like, let's say like they're over the counter?
Like if you're, you know, if you just see a product with Johnson & Johnson, does that?
Not really, to be honest. Certainly, like, they came out with their COVID-19 vaccine, remember? And people were getting that. And I don't think anyone was bringing up the baby powder litigation.
Yeah, so it seems like people are able to, you know, separate things pretty well. And
I also think that people know, like, the pharma industry is in general one of the most sued, like, industries in the world. And like, a company of that size, there's always going to be something happening, I feel like, just because of the vast number of products. But also, something that I thought about was, like, when you were mentioning the lawyers, Johnson & Johnson's lawyers, like, J&J has the money to pay these lawyers, right? Yep. Whereas, like, if you're basically, if you're one of the claimants, right? Like, you have to go and seek those law firms yourself.
Yeah,
if you've been a victim.
Yeah.
Right? So it's certainly J&J has superb lawyers, and this story's yet to unfold, I think.
For sure. I mean, there are class action lawsuits involved there as well, probably, and like, it's just I mean, for Johnson & Johnson, such a huge company, to, you know, of course they have the financial means to fight this, but I think for victims, this is just, it's more than just the financials, right? It's about like their health and how they've been impacted. So I think it's very important to them. And so that's why they're so passionate about this. And so we'll see how things unfold for sure in the coming days, months, and who knows how long this might go on for. But that's the end of this episode of the X Talks Life Science Podcast. If you liked today's show, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. Thanks, everyone, and see you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the X Talks Life Science Podcast. If you enjoyed our discussions today, please share the episode with your friends and colleagues, and be sure to subscribe in order to be notified when a new episode is released. To join in on the discussion, you can find X Talks on social media, email podcast@xtalks.com, or comment on the articles directly. Links are in the show description. Take a moment to join our community at xtalks.com to get access to everything we have to offer, including webinars, job listings, virtual meetings, articles, and more. The views and opinions expressed in the podcast are those of the speakers sharing them. They should not be taken as professional advice and do not necessarily reflect the policy or position Honeycomb Worldwide. For further information, email us at podcast@xtalks.com. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week.